Hi friends, welcome to another Friends of France Tuesday. I can't believe it. It's the new year. It's 2026. I hope you all had a great holidays, whether you were celebrating, if you were working, especially to our essential workers. Thank you so much for your service. You know, when it comes to the holidays, beyond the conversations of joy and getting together and spending time with loved ones, it's really about the food. There's always so much food. At least from what I'm used to in an Asian household, there is so much food and I love it. I gobble it all up. You know, food is such an integral part of not just culture, but of life in itself. It is the fuel that allows our hearts to beat, our lungs to breathe, and our cells to metabolize, powering every physiological process that sustains us. But with so much conversation surrounding food, from restrictive diet culture to viral wellness trends, nourishment can definitely become clouded by confusion, fear, and misinformation. Like within this conversation of food during the holidays, it can be a very sensitive topic to many. Despite it being meant for fun, nutrition, and nourishment, sometimes food becomes a vessel for being too conscientious about what we put into our body, especially surrounding the topics of weight. I guess this is why we see that during the start of the year, a lot of people's New Year's resolution is a change in diet, also working out so that they can shed everything that they ate during the holidays. Definitely, this topic of diet is one that can be a source of self-consciousness and many times self-infliction. I know this because I've been on many diets in the past. Whether you've heard of caloric deficit and restriction, intermittent fasting, or the ketogenic diet, or whatever restrictive diet that there might be. Even if it's just drinking celery juice and nothing solid at all. Or some people even do just a water diet for so many days. I've been through all of those, and definitely social media, especially nowadays, plays a huge part in this when it comes to body image, body ideals, and influencers with what it seems like perfect bodies. It's definitely easy to fall prey to not only misinformation and disinformation about nutrition and food, and many times coming from online personnel who have no education or actual or appropriate training when it comes to talking about nutrition. And also just the conversation itself, where it seems like we can't even enjoy food anymore because of all the fear-mongering that happens online. Well, we are here today to not only talk about food, nutrition, quote-unquote diet, and health fads, but we're also here to touch upon different modalities that we have so that we can savor our food without guilt and get both the satiety and also the nutrition from all the wonderful things that we eat. Today, we are joined by our expert guest, registered dietitian nutritionist Stephanie Chen from Massachusetts. She earned her master's in clinical psychology with research on novel body image and later earned a second master's in nutrition science from Boston University. Currently, Stephanie is a practicing dietitian and partner at Lori Lieberman & Associates, where she aligns with intuitive eating, which we'll touch upon, trained in cognitive behavioral therapy enhanced and family-based treatment. Stephanie is also the founder of Boston Asian Food Network, which highlights Boston's AAPI food community and is the home of Boston Asian Restaurant Week. What an icon. And fun fact, Stephanie is also a freelance fashion model. I mean, can you not tell? But this is actually how we met last year, walking the same runway show. What a beautiful and small world. Okay, time to munch on some useful information. Enjoy! What if your home could feel more like you? Meet Emmy, a New York-based home fragrance brand founded in 2020 by Erica and Mark. Inspired by the scents they grew up with, like steamed rice, tropical fruits, and temple incense, Emmy celebrates fragrance as memory, culture, and ritual. From design-forward candles to rediffusers and hand soaps, each product is crafted with clean ingredients, wood wicks, and thoughtful formulations. More than scent, Emmy creates atmosphere and belonging, storytelling in wax, in water, in air. So whether it's lighting a candle or washing your hands, small rituals are transformed into something intentional, making your space warm, alive, and entirely yours. Get 15% off at emmenyc.com. That's EMMENYC.com with code FRANZ. That's FRANZ. Find your story, find your atmosphere, find it with Emmy. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Friends of France podcast. And today I'm so excited to introduce to you our special guest and also the topic we'll be talking about. You know, it's quite crazy because we met on the New York Fashion Week runway.
And now we're
here for a very important discussion. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Christian.
I'm so excited for our conversation today because I think it's so, so important. And I have so many questions. And so obviously, I'll tag in your expertise. Can you please introduce yourself to everyone?
Hi, everyone. It's nice to be here. My name is Stephanie Chen, and I'm currently a dietitian.
Yes. Can you tell me your journey of what led you to the world of dietetics?
Yeah, it's not a straight line. There were some twists and turns along the way. So I actually studied psychology in college because I wanted to be a therapist and, you know, help people. And I actually interned at a county jail. I was in the Midwest. I was in Missouri. And it was an environment where there was not a good lifestyle or nutrition even available or accessible to the inmates there. And so that was when I got really interested in the intersection between physical health and also mental health and the interplay of that. So then I applied to a master's in nutrition at BU and I came here to Boston and I stayed and worked here. So now I have a private practice in Quincy.
Yeah, I love that. And thank you for all your great work. You know, the world of, I guess, just diet and nutrition is so important. You know, I've been working in cardiology for so many years now, and it's definitely an integral part of our practice beyond just the cardio-specific diet that most of our physicians tell our patients. And obviously, we refer them to like nutrition when it comes to, I guess, more of attacking like the high cholesterol and also for those with hypertension. And now that we see it online, or like when it comes to weight management, even I guess even the more niche topics when it comes to like GLPs that's been out in the news the past few years.
So buzzy. Yeah,
so buzzy. But I feel like even just for non-patients, right, just the general population, just the world in general, I think there's so much to know regarding, you know, just our diet and our eating habits and beyond just the, I guess, the physical and the health portion of that. Truly, I feel like there's such a beautiful mix between our first route within more of the psyche of it, right? You know, I feel like this conversation of nutrition and diet too can become quite sensitive for many.
I'll tell you something, Christian, is I almost feel like a therapist because every week I have someone crying to me in my office. It's such a personal subject.
Definitely. I mean, I feel like even within, you know, the modeling world too, right? This can become even a more sensitive topic as well.
Definitely.
When we first met, I think one of the reasons why I wanted to discuss further, especially within your role, as you were telling me your specific approach of intuitive and mindful eating. I've definitely heard of it in the past, but I never took the time to actually sit down and learn more about it. But this is your expertise. What is intuitive and mindful eating?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked. So it's two separate philosophies, but they really go hand in hand. So I'll start with intuitive eating. So it's based on the theory that as infants, we were all born with the innate sense of when we're hungry and when we're full. So as an example, I like to say you will never meet a baby, usually, who will refuse food when they're hungry or who will drink milk past the point of fullness. They're going to have a hard stop when they hit the fullness criteria. But as we grow and as we age and as we get more distracted by the outside world, we are constantly bombarded by external factors that may tell us when to eat or when to stop eating or even eating past the point of fullness sometimes as well. So intuitive eating is really working at getting back in tune with your body, making sure we're identifying those cues of hunger and fullness, and really great work with just being more in touch with yourself. Mindful eating is a little bit different, but it also means eliminating distractions. So we're talking eating with no screens. I know that's so hard in today's world, but not eating in front of the computer, cell phone, tablet, television is such a big one as well. Making sure we're plating all of our food. So hopefully clearing off your kitchen table for dinners and all meals, ideally snacks as well. Making sure we're plating everything, not eating out of boxes or bags of like chips or crackers that are family sized, and making sure we're savoring all of the textures, all of the colors, all of the different flavors on our plate. And that really helps us to slow down and enjoy that meal or that snack and to feel satisfied as well.
Yeah, I love that so much. I think it's some things that we generally don't think about, right? Especially, mm-hmm. I guess, when I'm in unlimited Korean barbecue. I mean, I don't know if there's mindful eating on my part there of if I'm full or not. But I guess within this concept and context of intuitive and mindful eating, you mentioned a lot while we're eating, right? While we're having a meal. I'm curious when it comes to, I guess, time frames outside of that specific period of when we're on the table or we're eating or the plating in itself. And I think I also go through this a lot. It's when it comes to, I guess, more of cravings, right? And it comes to someone says, I have a big appetite. Mm-hmm. I guess, how does that relate to intuitive and mindful eating? Like, are there practices that you've seen in your own experience or maybe any evidence-based studies that we have or regarding modalities regarding curbing appetite and cravings or even how we approach these?
Yeah, definitely. So there's a lot of research into binge eating disorder, if you've ever heard of that, which is a eating disorder. But even if you don't have binge eating disorder, people quote unquote binge eat a lot as well. And what I've seen is the best way to prevent those excessive cravings, especially when you're ravenously hungry, is to prevent it in the first place. And this might seem very simple, very basic, but the best way to do it is just pre-plan your meals and snacks throughout your day. And this is some of the work that I do with my clients as well as busy day, busy work schedule. When can you take a break? When can you get your breakfast in? When can you get your lunch in? And make sure you come prepared. Maybe even bring a whole bag of snacks with you to work if that's what it takes. But it is going to be very important to eat adequately throughout the day in regular intervals in order to mitigate any compensatory eating that you might do later on in the day. I'll give you a couple of examples of some typical clients that I see. So person A maybe is a person who runs on caffeine through the first half of the day, right? They're drinking espresso, they're skipping breakfast, they're skipping lunch. By evening, their bodies are physically running on empty. And now all of the calories that they didn't fuel themselves with during the day are being demanded by the body. So then as a result, dinner might be larger than necessary. It might be even a little bit more carb heavy. Sometimes we crave carbs, especially when we're low energy, because it's such an easy and fast way to get energy in. And we're conditioned to crave for more sweets as well when that happens. This is when people tell me, oh my gosh, after dinner, I have to have something sweet. And that's what is a very typical scenario. Whereas if you take person B, who ate all three adequate meals during the day and maybe even a couple of snacks, he or she is less likely to suffer from these cravings at the end of the day. And what I mean by an adequate meal is not just a rice cake with peanut butter, but we can discuss what that looks like a little bit later too.
Yeah. You know, I always say that I have a separate stomach for dessert.
For sweets.
For boba specifically. But yeah, I feel like it's so good to know those specific modalities that we can do, right? To even mitigate, like you said, that state of ravenous hunger in the first place. But I wanted to, I guess, take a step back and talk about the sources of this ravenous appetite and cravings in itself. Can you talk a little bit more about the biological mechanisms or even any hormones involved that affect the human appetite?
Yeah, definitely. There's honestly so many different hormones and they all interplay with each other as well. But I would say the two most important are ghrelin and leptin. So ghrelin is the hunger hormone. And the way it works is it typically comes and goes. It peaks and waves throughout the day, coinciding with the times that we typically eat. So the human stomach naturally empties within about 4 hours of our past meal. And that is when it starts to signal to our brain that, hey, I'm empty. When are you going to give me some more food? So this is when it's usually time for our next meal. So that is why the structure of the three meals a day is so important. Humans have unfortunately evolved to sometimes messing this internal system up. So when we're talking about intuitive eating, right? If we ignore those hunger cues, it can be detrimental if we're skipping a meal or skipping a snack. The hunger may go away, but that's temporary. It may come back into full force or even double the force later on. And that's when those cravings can come into play. Leptin is the fullness hormone. So it's able to react to a lot of different things among nutrients in our stomach. So if we're eating a balanced meal that contains fiber, fat, carbs, and protein, it's going to be able to identify those receptors for each one of those nutrients and then signal fullness to the brain and release leptin. Leptin is also released when it senses more fatty tissue, adipose tissue, that's being formed, like after a meal or after a snack. So all of these hormones are very trendy, and another hormone is GLP-1 that we talked about earlier. So there's all these GLP-1 imitators that basically kind of trigger that fullness and that satisfaction feeling as well, and blunts the hunger hormone. So I always find it fascinating how all of this works in the body.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the human body is so intricate, so complex, and so interesting. And I feel like it's so good to know also many times the processes of what's going on that makes us understand, oh, this is why maybe I feel this certain way, right? But I wanted to go back into the intuitive eating that we're talking about. Uh-huh. You know, it's very interesting because I feel like there's two types of people I meet now where it's like I eat to live, and then there's people that live to eat. And I feel like I'm the latter part, right? I have to eat. Like, I'm here to enjoy every food in the world.
I'm a foodie.
But there's people I've met where they're like, oh yeah, I don't enjoy eating at all. I just eat because I just need the nutrition, because I need to do it, or I need to maintain my weight, or I need to lose my weight. I guess when it comes to the context of intuitive eating, let's say for the other person, with the person's goal of just like weight management or even weight loss or just nutrition itself, how does intuitive eating compare with the effects of, let's say, you know, the buzzwords that we hear of caloric deficit or even intermittent fasting?
Yeah, great question. So I would lump all of these under the category of quote unquote diets, restrictive diets. And that includes a big class of other things, including Weight Watchers, intermittent fasting, we mentioned keto, paleo, Whole 30, Jenny Craig. All of these are about restriction. So cutting out a certain class of things or avoiding going over a certain threshold, basically. So they may result in a pretty rapid weight loss right off the bat. And that is when people are like, oh my gosh, I've lost 10 pounds in a week. I'm doing amazingly well. But the results are often not sustainable. And there's a couple of reasons why that is. So number one, the faster you lose weight, the more muscle to fat ratio that you actually lose. There's a certain threshold of how much weight you can actually lose over a week or over a month without triggering a lot of muscle mass. And muscle mass is one of the most key important things in your basal metabolism, right? The energy that you burn, even when you're not exercising, even when you're just sleeping, that's going to lower if you have less muscle. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. But I want to cite a study in 2018 for their participants who lost an average of 7% of their body weight over 12 to 14 weeks of a caloric deficit diet. A little bit less than a third of that came from muscle. So if you think about 7% of your body weight, what almost 2.5% of that came from muscle. So that can be pretty detrimental, especially if you take into account yo-yo dieting. So maybe you're losing weight and then you're regaining that weight. And that's actually more detrimental the more times you go through that. Because if you think about regaining the weight, it's not usually all muscle. The second reason is the more extreme changes that you make during your diet. For example, Whole 30, very extreme. You can only eat 30 different foods, basically. These changes are not meant for the long term. You're not going to do this for the rest of your life. So once you go back to eating the way you do, the weight is going to come back on. And that is why people who are stuck inside of that yo-yo dieting cycle, they really benefit from that intuitive approach that we talk about as well. So actually, the first goal of our nutrition practice is to stabilize the weight first and make sure we're not repeating the same counterproductive cycle over and over again. And we work by adjusting or tweaking the lifestyle in a series of small but sustainable changes. So I often check in with my clients. I'm saying things like, do you see yourself doing this for a long term? Is this something that you can keep up with? Is the food still enjoyable and satisfying to you? These are all very important questions. So everyone's nutrition counseling looks a little bit different, but we also focus on nutrition density, making sure you're getting all of the energy, but also all of the vitamins and minerals that you need to kind of become healthier.
Yeah, I love that because diet culture can become so ravenous, right? And I've had my fair share of trying out the keto diet. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm losing weight. And then I realize, oh my gosh, I'm not getting it back. And my aunt used to do Jenny Craig too. She's like, yeah, I'm losing weight. And then always gain it back, right? Because you're right. I agree. It's about the sustainability of the efforts and I guess the modality of that whole lifestyle as well, right?
Exactly.
Do you get red after a sip of alcohol? Well, I do, and it actually has a name, the alcohol flush reaction. And in my case, the infamous Asian glow. But something I didn't realize is that Asian glow isn't just a cosmetic issue, it's a real health risk, linked to increased cancer risk and poor alcohol metabolism. Thankfully, Join is here to help, an AAPI and woman-founded supplement brand that was created to be the most effective natural solution to support people with alcohol flush and recovery, while boosting overall health. Made with clinically studied, all-natural ingredients like glutathione, milk thistle, and B vitamins, you can now finally feel confident when you drink. Get 20% off your first order at jointhefun.com. That's jointhefun.com with the code FRANZ. That's FRANZ. Let's give the Asian glow a different meaning. What if a single cup of tea could hold a century of stories? Day Tea is a five-generation family business crafting award-winning high mountain oolong teas in Taiwan since 1918. Grown at the highest elevations, every leaf is hand-picked, all natural, and nurtured without additives or herbicides. The result is an array of complex flavors that evolve with each steep, honored at tasting competitions in France and Japan. From premium loose leaf and tea bags to ready-to-drink cold brew bottles, every sip is an invitation to slow down, savor, and connect. Discover tea as it's meant to be experienced. Use code FRANZ, that's FRANZ, for 10% off at daytea.co. That's daetea.co. Valid until February 14, 2026. Brew it hot, brew it cold. Take a moment for you.
I wanted to talk more outside of just, I guess, the patterns and the modality, but the actual plate in itself when we sit down and what we're actually eating. In this season, we've had a oncologist on and a cardiologist on, and they talk about, I guess, their specific diets within their niches and specialties that they often recommend to patients. And obviously, whatever a healthy meal looks like, I'm guessing might be individualized, right? Depending on a person's goal or in a person's needs. But I wanted to take it from the point of view of who I think is the most important person in the room when it comes to what actually goes in the plate, which is the dietitian, right? So for you, what would you consider a healthy meal? And I guess throughout the day, what does that healthy dietary plan look like?
Yeah, so let's break down what a balanced and adequate meal plan might look like. So I always recommend choosing a combination of different food groups at each meal. So ideally three or more. So that should ideally include a protein of some sort, a carb of some sort, and some type of a fruit or a vegetable for additional fiber, or a dairy or a healthy fat as well. So for example, we could take a yogurt parfait for breakfast. You know, if you have a Greek yogurt, especially, that would be a high protein source. Some granola, oat-based granola could be your carb, and some fresh berries could be your fruit for your fiber. It could even be a plate of steak, potatoes, and greens for dinner. So the steak would be your protein, the potatoes would be your carb, and the greens would be your vegetable. And it really just depends on what the client's goals are. The balance could be maybe a third, third, third for each of the food groups, or it could look like a little bit heavier on the vegetables or the proteins, depending on what we're working on. For example, if it is a little bit more geared towards weight management or diabetes control as well. But the schedule is also very important. So we usually recommend eating within 1 hour of waking. And I know that's so hard for a lot of people because they just tell me, I have no appetite in the morning. So number one, if you're a big coffee drinker, I say prioritize food over your caffeine. Try to eat your breakfast and then drink your coffee, because we do know that caffeine suppresses the appetite since it's a stimulant. And in addition, we should be eating every at least 2 to 4 hours throughout the day. So not grazing necessarily within that 2 hour gap, but still not going more than 4 hours without eating, because we know that is the time that it takes for the stomach to empty again and for the ghrelin to kick in. And so we would work out a meal plan that takes into account the preferred foods, but also tweaking the timing of the eating schedule as well.
Yeah, these are so good to know. You know, sometimes I don't even think about the timing. I mean, you know, you hear those things like supposed to one huge meal, but like, cut it up throughout the day, like small meals. But one thing you've been mentioning a lot during this past portion is the word vegetables, right? Uh-huh. I must say I've learned to love vegetables growing up. Now I'm like, oh, I love it. But I guess what advice would you give to someone who cannot seem to add vegetables to their diet?
That is such a relevant question because you do not know how many people come to me and they're just telling me, you know, I did not grow up in a household with vegetables. Mm-hmm. And now as a result, I do not like vegetables. So a couple of techniques that we could use. So if it is a taste or texture issue, I recommend masking it. So for example, you could puree vegetables into a sauce, like take a spaghetti tomato sauce. Maybe you're cutting up some onions or peppers or zucchini, pureeing it into the sauce or chopping them up into tiny little pieces. And I've often had clients tell me, wow, I don't even notice it's in it. Especially if you put meat into the sauce and then it's kind of like a bit chunky anyway. Mm-hmm. So that is a great way to do it. And you could even put them into a smoothie. So if you have a blender, you could put a handful of spinach. If you're adventurous, you could try carrots or kale or cauliflower or anything else. If it's just a little bit, I will say it doesn't change the taste or the texture that much. If you go overboard, yes, you will notice there are vegetables in your smoothie. There is a technique known as chaining that I'll use to introduce new foods as well. So take a food that you like already and choose something with a similar texture or a similar flavor to allow the palate to adjust to it gradually, because we know the palate can change over time. So for example, if you like chicken nuggets or chicken tenders, and you like them dipped in ketchup, my recommendation would be to try something breaded, like cauliflower bites or zucchini bites that come with that crunchy sort of coating, that breading on the outside that mimics the breading on the chicken nuggets. And it might sound strange, but go ahead and dip them into some ketchup, because that flavor will make it a lot more appealing and palatable to try as well.
Wow, these are such helpful tips. And I agree, sometimes it is a texture problem. This kale, for some reason, I just cannot eat it. But I love Haiti's Kale Boost Green Tea. And it has like chia seeds in it, and I think they have apple juice in it as
well. I've tried that one. Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's so good. I just can't seem to eat kale in itself. I don't know why. My favorite salad is from Just Salad, called Chicken Poblano Salad. It has kale, so I just tell them to remove the kale and just add extra lettuce.
Have you tried massaging the kale? So you remove the stems. Yep, this is a secret trick. And then you literally massage olive oil into the kale leaves until they turn a nice bright green color. And that means they've broken down the fibers a little bit and it's a lot easier to eat.
Well, that's my next step, is to massage the kale. Good to know. And I think also when you were talking about, you know, what a healthy meal looks like, you mentioned about, you know, one of the main classes of food when it comes to carbs, right? I feel like there's also this huge contention online when it comes to carbs, as if it's an enemy, right?
Right.
Guess it's a reminder too that carbs are not evil, right?
Exactly. They're that fast energy boost that is very satisfying in the moment. So that's why we're conditioned to like it. But if you avoid it, it's still going to be less satisfying if you just have the steak and the veggies without the potato.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. And I feel like aside from carbs, these are one of the hot topics that we see online, right? Where there's always this viral TikTok video about it, where an influencer is probably going in the grocery store, picking up a product in the shop, and it's like, do not eat this. This is bad for your body. This is evil. And each time I see those videos, I'm like, my dietitian friends are probably pulling their hair right now watching those videos. And there's a lot of Reddit forums about certain foods as well. I wanted to bring some to your attention that you probably obviously know of already, but our audience, I'm sure, have a lot of questions about them. Even I have so many questions about them and would love to hear your thoughts on them. So some burning topics online. And I think one of the big ones that I've been hearing and reading about recently are seed oils, which I believe are the new villainized group within the world of nutrition. What are seed oils, and should we really be avoiding them?
Good question. So seed oils are oils pressed or extracted from seeds. For example, canola oil. The big debate right now is their balance of fat content. So we know that there's healthy fats. We know there's unhealthy fats like saturated fats, but these are actually still unsaturated fats, but different types. So historically, We ate close to a 1-to-1 ratio of omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids. Omega-6 fatty acids do contain some precursors to some inflammatory components. So I think that is the concern right now, which is we are all excessively inflamed because the ratio that we eat now is more like 10-to-1. So much more of the omega-6 fatty acids than the omega-3 fatty acids. Those are hard to get enough of, I will say, in our traditional Western diet. And so the big oils that get demonized are typically corn, canola, cottonseed, soybean, sunflower, safflower, grapeseed, and rice bran oils. For cooking, I would say I would typically recommend something like olive oil or something like avocado oil, which has a little bit of a higher heat cooking. So olive oil contains a little bit more of a balance between omega-3, 6, and 9 fatty acids, while avocado oil has a little bit more of the omega-3 acids as well. It's a little bit more balanced. So there's still a lot of debate going on right now, but the research still needs to be a little bit updated about whether omega-6 fatty acid actually causes more inflammation.
There we have it. Now, my next question, and this is very personal to me because I think my daily coffee order is something with oat milk. I'm not lactose intolerant, but I break out once each time I have dairy, is what I've noticed. But I guess within the discussion of plant-based milk, like almond, soy, oat milk, are they really much healthier compared to animal milk? Like for those who are not allergic to animal milk, they just want to get the plant-based alternative. I guess my personal question to you is there a plant-based milk that you would prefer or would recommend, either almond, soy, oat, or even beyond that, and why?
Yeah, really good question. So I think dairy is another food group that's getting demonized right now, but it's still actually much more nutritious than the plant-based alternative. So it usually has more protein, calcium, and vitamin D as well. And I'll give you a quick hierarchy of protein. So dairy milk, about a cup of it, 8 ounces, has about 8 grams of protein. Same amount of soy milk has about 7 grams of protein. Oat milk only has about 4 grams of protein, and almond milk is only about 1 gram or less of protein. So it's a pretty big difference across the range. So I always say if you can tolerate dairy, if you don't notice yourself breaking out, for instance, and your stomach is okay with the lactose, better to have the regular dairy milk. But if you can't tolerate it, then soy milk would be the second more nutritious option.
So do I have to say goodbye to my daily oat milk?
It's not going to hurt you. I think it's fine to still have it if you like it.
Okay, next one. This is also a big topic and a big question. Artificial sweeteners like stevia or sucralose or even monk fruit, are they really much healthier, I guess, to the more traditional sugars that we know of?
Healthier in some senses, but maybe not in other senses. So if you're diabetic, let's just say, and you are trying to avoid added sugars, yes, the sweeteners will not spike up your blood sugars. So that will make sure that you're better controlled glycemic wise. But sweeteners have other effects. So pros, I would say sweeteners do not contribute to cavities, tooth decay, because bacteria can't eat them. They're fake sugar. They will not spike your blood sugars. And the cons, though, there's some research that says they may alter reward pathways in the brain to actually increase sweet cravings, because it's almost like we're tricking our brain that we're eating sugar when we're not actually eating sugar, basically. And it may alter the gut microbiome balance in our large intestine, which, I mean, this is a very new topic in research as well, which may be related to chronic diseases like diabetes or even heart disease. And so the research is still out on what that means. But we also know it may cause GI issues. Have you ever heard the stories of people who eat a whole bag of those sugar-free gummy bears and then they have explosive diarrhea afterwards?
Yeah.
So especially for the sugar alcohols ending in OL, like sorbitol or maltitol, those sugars are going to cause some stomach issues for sure. So that's a big con.
Yeah, well, that's also good to know. I feel like there's also, when it comes to these topics, beyond just the discussions online, and I guess the unwarranted input from those who don't have any credentials or training within nutrition and dietetics, I think there's a lot of fear mongering that happens, right? When it comes to these topics, I guess it's really good to hear from someone and who knows what they're talking about. And so I guess can be like really a voice of reason when it comes to these questions. And I guess when it comes to voice of reason, we kind of touched upon this, but regarding my kale juice, I guess beyond just the textural problem, and I guess the alternative is, you know, to have more juices, which really helps me a lot, especially with kale. I guess there's a group of people who are in this green juice, celery juice, glancin, green powder lifestyle with the idea that they are super beneficial, right? But actually, is there any benefit to these that we know of? And if not, I guess what's your proposal regarding getting healthier when it comes to the greens?
Yeah, good question. So when it comes to juicing, so if you look at a juicer machine, you're basically taking out all of the fiber. So it comes out the back way. You're not drinking any of the fiber. And that's the part that we want a little bit more of, because we know that typical Americans don't get enough. But the juices will still contain the vitamins and the minerals that are water soluble. So if you are drinking a carrot rather than eating it, it's the fiber that you're missing out on, but you're technically still getting the micronutrients that are in the carrot. So rather than juicing, I would recommend blending. So get a blender, toss the carrot in there, maybe make it a little more appetizing, toss something sweet like an apple in there, blend all of it up. The fiber is still in there. So you're technically still keeping it in the smoothie, if that makes sense. Juice cleanses, I don't know if you've heard of those.
Mm-hmm.
They're effective, again, just like all of those other diets we talked about, at weight loss, because you're essentially not eating anything. You're just drinking the juice. So you're basically starving yourself. So they're not very legit. So if they recommend only juicing and not eating for X number of days, you're basically just going to lose a bunch of weight off the bat because you're not getting the actual energy that your body needs. So green powders are a little different. So they're marketed as, hey, you don't like vegetables? Just pour this powder into your food and that counts as your 5 fruits and veggies for the day. That is not the case, unfortunately, because they, again, have the vitamins and minerals, but they don't really have the fiber that we're talking about. So it would be better to still eat the actual fruit or vegetable, or hide it somehow in your sauce or your smoothie, or maybe get those cauliflower bites that we talked about as well and try them. So it's still better to get the actual fiber.
Tired of health fads and fleeting trends? Reprise Health takes wellness back to its roots, back to all natural remedies that have truly stood the test of time. Reprise is a holistic wellness brand bringing the ancient wisdom of traditional Eastern medicine into the modern world. Their daily gummies feature ancient Asian superfoods like ginseng, turmeric, and reishi mushrooms that are proudly sourced from KPC herbs, trusted by acupuncturists and herbalists for over 100 years. Whether to help you rest, focus, de-stress, or sleep, bring centuries of wisdom into your everyday health for 15% off at reprisehealth.com. That's R-E-P-R-I-S-E health.com with the code FRANZ. That's F-R-A-N-Z. One-time use and cannot be combined with other codes. Ancient wisdom, modern remedy. What if your routine felt less like a chore and more like a ritual? Rooted in Japan since 1946, Uka Beauty creates everyday practices that remind us beauty isn't just how you look, but how you feel. At the heart of their mission is regenerative beauty, from ingredients that restore biodiversity to refillable, circular packaging that reduces waste. Their iconic Sculpt Kanzen Brush transforms scalp care into full body relief, easing headaches, boosting circulation, and releasing jaw tension. And with innovative shampoos, nail oils, and serums, Uka restores balance and vitality with timeless Japanese sensibility and craftsmanship. Join the mission of turning care into impact. In collaboration with Rom Spa, you can get 15% off your first order at ukabeauty.com. That's ukabeauty.com with the code FRANZ. That's FRANZ. One-time use only and cannot be combined with other codes.
But I must say, right, like, I feel like we can't avoid the fact also that, I guess, healthy and healthier options of food can be a privilege because not everyone has the access to, I guess,
that's
the grocery stores.
Yeah.
Or
there's food deserts out there.
There's food deserts out there. Yeah, so I feel like that's where it becomes such a very complex and even a sociological issue. And I know that we have a lot of work to be done. But I think that's also the beautiful thing, I guess, with social media, besides the misinformation and disinformation that can come out of it, is the education, the that comes out, right? And I guess that's my hope too. Also, even for this specific episode, right? Sometimes information, accurate information, can be hard to come by in the webs of the internet. As we end this episode after such a great discussion, I wanted to turn back to your early roots in your psychology career.
Mm-hmm.
I did some digging and, you know, and also, as you mentioned, your thesis centered on body image, specifically clothing. So interesting. It talked about its impact on mood and behaviors and body dissatisfaction. And this is such a huge, always been a huge topic, but I feel like has been even a bigger topic nowadays, especially with, you know, the rise of social media and these ideals and even these ideal body types and influencers and models online and how they look like, right? And weight and weight management. There's such a personal topic and it leads to other sensitive discussions such as eating disorders, one that you touch upon. But all this roots in food, right? And food is such an integral part of humanity. It's not just because we need it to survive. It's part of culture as well. So it individualizes us as societies. And like I said, social media can set a standard in this regard. I guess as someone who sees clients, and obviously your whole profession is in regards to food and the health factor around it, what would be your message to someone who finds it difficult to feel like themselves within the context of food and what they feel like they should or should not eat?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you brought that up. And honestly, I was very, very impressed that you found my psychology master's thesis online. You do your research, you do your research. But my message, so in today's image-obsessed society, we have Instagram, we have TikTok, we have lots of editing that goes on in photos and videos as well. I can virtually guarantee you that if there is not one single person, regardless of gender, by the way, who has not experienced body dissatisfaction in some way, shape, or form during their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you take an industry such as modeling that relies more heavily on appearance and aesthetics. And it is such a personal topic. So in my first meeting with clients, I always screen for disordered eating behaviors and relationship with food. So one of my most useful questions is, out of 100% of your daily thoughts, what percent is revolving around food? More than just what you're planning to eat that day, like, oh, what I'm going to have for lunch, but more like intrusive thoughts about food. And also, what if we add in thoughts about your body and your body image into the mix? So for example, a person who is not at risk for eating disorders, they may say around 10 to 20% for thoughts around both food and body image. But whereas someone who is at risk or even already with an active eating disorder and they don't know about it, they may say upwards of 50%, and some have even said 80 or 90%. So that's pretty crazy when you think about all of your thoughts throughout the day. Vast majority about that is revolving around food and your body. So it's really, really hard to pull yourself out of that sometimes. And it really is becoming a mental disorder at that point, because I say it's almost like an alien has taken control over your brain. And now you have less mental space available for your day-to-day thoughts, your chores, your social activities, your work, your relationships, or anything else that might be important to you. And it can really impair your life at that point. My advice would be to check out intuitive eating and mindful eating principles. But also just remember that food is not something that is optional. We cannot live without food, like alcohol. We literally die without food. Food is fuel that keeps our heart pumping, it keeps our lungs breathing, and it keeps our cells metabolizing. Living itself is a freaking miracle, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. If you think about all the work that goes into it, every body, no matter the size or shape, deserves to be nourished and satisfied. Everyone deserves to be able to enjoy what you eat and not feel restricted or even penalized by their food. And if you would like more help in your relationship with your food, I would suggest reaching out to a local dietitian who is licensed in your state. By the way, not a nutritionist, but a dietitian. Nutritionists don't have to be licensed and specializes in this space. And I think that would really help if you're looking for help in this area.
Yeah, that was so beautiful. Stephanie, thank you so much. And this is such a beautiful and an important discussion. You're right. Food is fuel. We need it to live, right? To breathe, exactly. For our hearts to pump. And it's just beautiful work that you do. And I'm so honored that you joined me today to talk more about it. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this discussion. And I think it's so important just for people to hear about stuff like this.